Chapter 6. Diagon Alley. The security camera panned slowly along a narrow concrete hallway, then back. This hall was almost never used, though it had a pair of tiny restrooms at one end. And so, the security guard had gotten out of the habit of watching the monitor displaying that corridor. So when 7 trunks and 8 people, most perched on the trunks having a game of cards, though one was on an oar floating several feet off the ground, appeared out of nowhere, he didn't notice. Genkai glanced around, then blew a cloud of cigarette smoke up towards the oar. "Where are we?"
"Charing Cross Station, in London,"
Botan answered, hopping from her oar and making it vanish. As an afterthought, she added, "And the local time is 10 a.m.
"10?" Kuwabara yelped. "We didn't leave till 4 in the afternoon."
"We took a 3-hour flight across 9 time zones," Botan said, "backwards."
"I hope you took a nap before we left, as I told you to," Genkai added. "We have a long day ahead of us," she said pointedly.
Kuwabara promptly lifted his trunk to his shoulder, then took Yukina's as well. Yusuke grabbed his and Keiko's in response. Kurama glanced at the 3 remaining trunks, then at Hiei, whose cold look was easily interpreted as, "Let them carry their own shit." Kurama turned to Genkai and bowed slightly.
"Master Genkai, can you shrink those?"
Genkai nodded, eyes on Yusuke and Kuwabara.
"Of course."
The pair looked away sheepish.
"If you two would hold those before you, I'm sure you wouldn't want this spell to hit the wrong target."
They nearly dropped the luggage in their haste to get it between themselves and Genkai. She neatly shrank each trunk to wallet size, 1 at a time, passed them out to their owners, then led them from the corridor and the station.
"Master Genkai, where are we going?"
Keiko asked after a couple of blocks.
"There."
She pointed at a tiny, run-down pub jammed between 2 far larger, more modern buildings. None of the people passing it seemed to notice it was there.
"The Leaky Cauldron."
"Nice place," Kuwabara murmured, visibly edgy.
"Ignore the shabbiness. It's the entrance to the most magical place in London, give or take some of the monuments," Genkai told them. "Good magic and bad. You're picking up on the bad. Focus."
"Sorry, Genkai."
They entered the inn, finding themselves in a modest but clean bar. Genkai led them through it, past a number of mostly older-looking people in capes and robes, and to a tiny courtyard in the back, empty of all but a battered dustbin. The teens looked at her dubiously.
"So, where's this fabulous magical whatever?" Yusuke asked.
"Patience, Yusuke." Genkai took out her wand and looked at the brick wall.
3 up, 2 across," she counted, tapping the brick.
The teens jumped back, startled, as the courtyard was filled with the harsh rasp of stones grinding together. The bricks efficiently, impossibly, folded back in on themselves, becoming an archway between them and a narrow, crowded street.
"It's like looking into the Makai," Yukina breathed.
"More like into the 14th century," Kurama said.
"Welcome to Diagon Alley,"
Genkai said dryly, leading them onto the street.
"Have you been here before?" Keiko asked.
Genkai nodded sharply. "Many years ago."
She glanced around, smiling faintly.
"It hasn't changed a bit."
She briskly began pointing out shops they'd need to stop at. Places for textbooks, robes, cauldrons, and owls if they wanted them.
"Genkai, look! Brooms!"
Botan squealed.
"Later, Botan!"
Botan paid no attention, craning her head to look over the children crowded around the window display.
"Oh, what a beauty!
That's the new Firebolt Silver,"
a little boy told her. He looked to be about 9.
"They just came out with it last month. Heartwood ash handle, silver birch twigs, all hand-selected for optimum aerodynamics and minimal drag."
"Really? Wow!"
At Genkai's aggravated sigh, Yusuke and Kurama turned back, took Botan by the arms,
and began walking her away from the shop. "Tell me later," she called to the child. "Genkai," she whined, when they caught back up.
"Bank first, then school supplies, then you can satisfy your curiosity."
She strode into a massive, white marble building, easily the largest on the street, forcing the teens to hurry after her.
"Gringotts, the Wizard's Bank."
"Run by goblins, I see," Kurama murmured.
"Goblins aren't exclusive to Makai," Genkai responded. "And don't get any ideas," she said more softly to Kurama and Hiei. "The vaults are deep underground, guarded by curses and dragons, and none of them hold the sorts of interesting things you find in Makai. Mostly it's just money."
"Boring," Hiei grumbled. "No challenge at all," Kurama agreed. Genkai looked at them searchingly, decided that they were honestly uninterested, and gave the group an all-inclusive warning glare.
"Stay here. Don't cause trouble."
She then went to talk to a goblin teller, and was shortly whisked away.
"Don't cause trouble? Who does she think she's talking to?"
"You, Yusuke," Botan huffed, "and Kuwabara and Hiei."
"I, the great Kuwabara Kazuma, wouldn't stoop to picking a fight with a little shrimp like him."
"Like you just tried to?" Keiko asked sweetly. "Be glad he's too busy glaring at the bankers to bother with you."
"Onisan?"
Yukina asked softly. Hiei tensed momentarily, still unused to hearing her call him that.
"What is it?"
He indicated the bank employees with his head. "They're watching us."
"They're supposed to, aren't they?"
"Yes, but I don't like it."
"You don't have to, Onisan."
Hiei grunted, eyes focused on the goblins. Off to the side, Yusuke was making faces at a particularly watchful, sour-faced, older goblin. Genkai returned, her hair windblown, with several small, heavy sacks. She distributed them, keeping the largest for herself.
"Spending money for the semester," she explained shortly. "Make it last. I won't be giving you more till December."
Yusuke took a few of the coins out, peering at them.
"Weird." "The copper ones are nuts, the silver are sickles, and the gold are galleons. 29 nuts equal a sickle. 17 sickles are a galleon. Simple."
"Simple, she says," Yusuke muttered. Kuwabara already looked poleaxed about the math.
"Yes, very simple. Just don't buy something you have to haggle for."
She led them back out onto the street.
"And check with me before making any extravagant purchases. Like brooms."
She gave Botan a look as they walked.
"Only the Quidditch players need those."
"Quidditch?"
"A popular sport. It's something like basketball on broomsticks, only with cannonballs chasing the players."
Yusuke's eyes lit up.
"Cool!" "First things first, Yusuke. You'll learn about Quidditch soon enough. Right now, you need wands."
She stopped at the last shop on the street. A small sign over the door read, in peeling gold paint, "Ollivanders, makers of fine wands since 382 BC. A bell over the door chimed softly as Genkai entered, the others crowding in behind her. There was only a tiny, dim waiting area at the front of the store. The remainder of the space was taken up by dusty, crowded shelves, narrow aisles, and piles of slim boxes that apparently couldn't be fit anywhere else. Kuwabara shivered.
"Hey, Kurama, this shop's almost as old as you, Yoko,"
Yusuke teased, trying to ignore the nearly tangible feel of power lying heavy in the shop.
"He's hardly that old. Besides, this actual store was more likely built in the 15th century or later. It doesn't look Roman or medieval."
"Ah!" a soft voice interrupted. Several of the teens jumped as an old, spindly man seemed to materialize out of the darker parts of the store.
"Professor Genkai, I wondered when I would be seeing you."
His two pale eyes swept over the rest of the group, stopping on Kurama.
"And your students. Oh my, we seem to have a problem.
Problem, Ollivander? Genkai asked sharply. The old man stepped up to Kurama, taking his chin in skeletal fingers and tilting the redhead's face this way and that, meeting Kurama's calm, shuddered gaze.
A mismatch like this can't have a wand for you, oh no. Creative what you did, no doubt about that. It was a great thing. Incredible, unbelievable, some would say terrible. But great. But it has its price, and part of that is I can't have a wand for you.
Kurama took the wand he'd made from his sleeve.
Will this do?
Oh! Ollivander looked relieved. He carefully took the wand, examining it.
Sino style. Rosewood 8 inches. The core is your own hair, I take it.
Kurama nodded.
Good, good. Who made it for you? Blood relative?
No, I made it. My father left a kit.
Even better.
Ollivander handed the wand back to Kurama.
Don't let other people use it. That's risky at best, even with a wand designed for those whose souls are original to their bodies. And yours isn't. It just might decide to fire the wrong way if someone else tries to use it.
He turned to the others, a tape measure appearing in his hand. Now that that's settled, let's fit the rest of you for your wands.
Who first?
I am, Yusuke said, somewhat belligerently, stepping in front of the others.
Hold out your wand arm, then,
Ollivander said pleasantly. He began taking measurements, shoulder to finger, wrist to elbow, and then more unlikely places, such as around Yusuke's head. Genkai squeezed past the other teens and beckoned Kurama to lean down.
You're finished here, she told him quietly. Go outside. It's too crowded in here.
She gave him a stern look.
Get an ice cream or something. We'll meet you at the pet shop. Not the owl shop. The other one. And reputation is everything here, so stay out of Nocturne Alley.
Kurama nodded and quietly left.
Every wand has a core of a magical substance, Ollivander was informing the students, slipping back among the shelves as the tape measure continued making measurements of Yusuke on its own.
Here at Ollivander's, his voice rose to carry to the waiting area. We use unicorn hairs, dragon heartstrings, and phoenix feathers. Just as no two beasts are the same, neither are any two Ollivander's wands. And, of course, you will never get such good results with another wizard's wand, not after one has chosen you. Here.
He reemerged from the dusty shelves with a slim box and pressed it into Yusuke's hands.
Oak and phoenix feather, 9 inches.
Well, go on, give it a wave.
Yusuke took the wand from the box, looking extremely skeptical, and wiggled it a bit. The lights flickered, and Ollivander snatched it back immediately.
Beech and dragon heartstring, 7¼ inch.
Yusuke waved this one, and a row of shelves exploded, showering boxes and dust over them.
Definitely not, Ollivander coughed, waving at the dust. Try this, apple and phoenix feather, 8 inches.
Look, old man! Yusuke began angrily, gesturing with the wand.
A blast knocked him off his feet, cutting him off mid-sentence.
Oh, that will never do!
Ollivander plucked the wand from Yusuke's hand as the youth leapt to his feet, incensed.
Perhaps your unicorn hair, despite appearances? Here, ebony and unicorn hair, 10 inches.
The new wand leapt from Yusuke's hand the instant Ollivander passed it over.
Or not. Not to worry, young man. We'll find the wand for you yet.
Even if we blow up the shop in the process, Genkai said.
Happens all the time, Ollivander responded. There are very good reasons why my shop is the last on the street. Here we are, sandalwood and phoenix feather. 8½ inches. Smells nice, doesn't it? Very spiritual. Go on, try it.
Yusuke glanced at the strange little man in annoyance.
Who cared what a wand smelled like, after all?
And half-heartedly waved the wand. A shower of silvery sparks shot from the tip, filling the room and floating gently towards the floor. Yusuke blinked down at the wand in surprise.
An excellent choice, young man, Ollivander said softly. Who's next?
Me!
Kurama turned away from the window, chuckling,
and began walking back down the street. Poor Mr. Ollivander. He'd probably never had 5 teenage customers clamoring to be next. Well, 4 were doing so. Hiei had stood off to the side, watching, and Kurama knew the fire demon was simply waiting for the others to become distracted, arguing their turns, at which point he would step up and take the first one. He glanced into the shop windows as he walked. Second-hand robes, he would never set foot in there. A toy shop of some sort. The sign in the window advertised Wet Start Fireworks, so perhaps it was worth a second look on his way back. Kurama suppressed a sneer at the non-owl pet shop. Cats and the like were all very well, and frogs and lizards had their uses, but mice and rabbits and such? He'd been a fox for far too many centuries to consider them pets. They were, as far as he was concerned, lunch, although he doubted he would like the taste in his human body. Speaking of taste, hadn't Genkai mentioned ice cream? The shop was just a few doors down. He boggled for a moment at the sheer number of flavors before settling on a simple cone of vanilla mint, which turned out to be creamy white ice cream with flecks of ground vanilla bean and swirls of leaf green mint running through it. And it wasn't the chemical colored flavoring Kurama had grown to expect in the human world, but the real thing, enough of the chlorophyll and leaf juices remaining to register on his key. Note to self, he thought, buy Hiei a cone later. He continued on his way, looking at the shop displays and eating his ice cream, perhaps a tad quickly and impolitely. A rack of solid gold marbles caught his eye, until one of them shot ink into a customer's face. A sparkle deep within the same shop drew him, until he stood before a locked cabinet containing a chess set of glossy black stone and bright crystal. It was pretty, and undoubtedly expensive, not to mention overpriced and easily stolen, of course. His Yoko side had appraised the true value and offered 10 different ways of stealing it in a matter of seconds. But it didn't appeal. He turned away to browse through the rest of the shop. Finally, he stood in front of a Western-style tea set. It had drawn his attention because of the lovely rose design painted delicately on the side of each piece, the sign in front of it proclaiming that it was a stay-hot tea set, and Kurama thought that it was the sort of thing that his mother would enjoy. He caught the clerk's attention. "Sir, how much for this?" The answer was actually reasonably close to his assessment of the value, after accounting for profit markup, but it would take most of the allowance Genkai had given him. Oh well, he didn't need an allowance for... What was it human students bought again? Candies, manga, posters... Though it might be different in this country. Did British wizards have manga? Oh dear, it was going to be very difficult to learn to fit in here. "Hello, Susan!" Kurama jumped as a boy spoke behind him and to his left. The speaker moved up next to him to look at the tea set. "These are actually quite good," the voice remarked. "Ron's mom has a set. I'm hoping they have one with a less girly design on it, so I can get it for an old friend of my parents." Kurama abruptly realized the boy was talking to him. He looked over, sizing up the oblivious, still-talking boy. Wild, messy black hair, bangs falling haphazardly over a discolored scar, and thick glasses. Kurama couldn't tell what color the eyes behind them were. Pale skin, it looked as though the kid didn't get quite enough sun. Or perhaps nutrition, either. Though Kurama couldn't quite tell past the worn, too large outfit the boy was wearing. He was shorter than Kurama, though the fox was under average compared to a modern Caucasian teenager, and Kurama guessed he was perhaps a year younger as well. A bag full of packages and a pocket noticeably full of coins. Huh? But the rest of the boy said he was poor. "He drinks a lot of tea," the boy continued, "'cause he gets coldies at—" He finally glanced up. Oh, green eyes. Right into Kurama's startled face. "Oh, jeez, I thought you were one of my classmates." He turned faintly red. "I'm sorry, it's all right," Kurama told him, catching the boy's sleeve as he tried to move away. This could be very helpful, with a little work, he thought, as the boy flushed more deeply and looked down. He politely let go, holding his hand out to shake. "I'm Kurama," he said, smiling brightly. "Kurama, yes. Mina, no, Kurama Mina Mino." It was going to take a while to get used to saying his name the other way around. Harry Potter. Today was the last possible day they could get school supplies. Mrs. Weasley had kept postponing it after Harry's incident with his scar, as he'd not entirely recovered by the next dawn. Harry figured that was because he'd spent the wee hours lying awake, unable to convince himself that he wasn't really going to have another Voldemort nightmare. But Molly had called Madame Pomfrey on the fire anyways. Hogwarts' esteemed nurse had ordered total bed rest for at least several days, and added that she was to be contacted immediately if Harry had another vision. With such official backing, Harry had been coddled to what seemed a ridiculous extent. It had been a singularly unsettling experience, to say the least. But finally, finally, Mrs. Weasley had relented, and today she was taking him, Ron, the twins, and Ginny to London. They'd stay the night at the Leaky Cauldron and get on the train the next day. "I'll be fine in the back," Harry was telling Mrs. Weasley. "Let Ginny sit up front. If he got any more special treatment, he'd go nuts." He shoved his trunk into the luggage compartment of the car Percy had picked him up in. It wasn't a ministry car, after all, though Molly had been more watchful of her husband when he restored this one, which explained its inability to fly or turn invisible, and closed it. The owl cages went into the back seat, the four boys piling in after, and they were on their way. The drive was relatively uneventful, if you discounted the way trees, houses, and entire suburbs jumped out of their way. It was scarcely an hour before Mrs. Weasley parked in a space that conveniently appeared across from the Leaky Cauldron. She herded them into the pub, the Weasley boys loaded down with the trunks and Harry carrying the cages, and had them all set it down next to the stairs. "Now, I'm going to arrange for our rooms, then Ginny needs personal things," she informed them, ignoring Ginny's horrified blush. "You boys go on ahead, and I'll meet you at Flourish and Blot's at, 1 o'clock. That gave them nearly 2 hours free. "No mischief, no fighting." Her eyes narrowed sternly. "Fred and George, no pranks. None of you spoil your appetite, and do not go down Nocturne Alley." The four of them murmured reluctant agreement and left the pub. As they started down Diagon Alley, Fred put a companionable arm around his twin. "You know, George, we haven't had a chance to get those yet." "We haven't, had we?" George said amicably. "Get what?" Harry asked.
Ron's dress robes!"
they chorused.
"What?"
Ron sputtered.
"Nice new dress robes for our favorite little brother."
"I'm your only little brother,"
Ron protested automatically.
"But how?"
"Never you mind that, Ronnykins," Fred said, earning himself a sour look for the nickname.
George grinned at Harry over Ron's shoulder as Fred continued.
"Suffice it to say that we obtained the money legally and are replacing your robes out of the kindness of our hearts."
That got a disbelieving snort out of Ron.
"I'm hurt. Our own baby brother doesn't believe us," Fred mourned.
"I don't believe that load of rubbish," George scoffed. He turned to Ron. "This is pure self-preservation here, plain and simple. The mold on those robes is making us sneeze."
"Now that I'll believe," Ron muttered, as the twins steered him toward Madame Malkin's.
He twisted his head around as Harry started to follow.
"Hey, Harry, go see if they've got anything new at Quality Quidditch Supplies, and tell me about it. We'll still be at the fitting. Dress robes take forever."
"Sure." One whirlwind ride through Gringotts later, Harry had a smallish sackful of money for the first term, and remembered an errand he had to run. Remus Lupin's birthday was coming up. Just 'cause there's a war on is no reason to skip a friend's birthday, but the man is impossible to shop for, Sirius had whined in his last letter.
But Harry had thought of something during his recent incarceration in bed. Mrs. Weasley was apparently one of those mothers who believed in keeping up a sick child's fluid intake, and used her own teacups for the broths and teas she took up to Harry. The cups were enchanted to keep liquids hot and fresh, no matter how long Harry let it sit. He thought that would be a nice gift for Remus, if he could find a set with a pattern other than daisies. He squeezed into the packed shop, careful not to get too close to the gold gobstones, edging around customers as he looked for tea sets. He caught a glimpse of a thick, vibrant red ponytail, one of the Hufflepuffs Hermione talked girl stuff with. What was her name? She moved slightly to the side, signaling the clerk, and he caught sight of teacups. He moved up beside her. "Hello, Susan," he said. She was a bit high-strung, easily startled. He didn't want her to turn around, suddenly trip over him or something, and break the sets. These are actually quite good. They were, if she was considering buying them. Ron's mum has a set. I'm hoping they have one with a less girly design on it, so I can get it for an old friend of my parents. He drinks a lot of tea because he gets coldies. Harry glanced up, right into the face of a very stunned-looking boy. Oh, jeez, I thought you were one of my classmates. Not only that, but a female classmate. I'm sorry, this was so embarrassing. He tried to melt back into the crowd, but the boy caught at his sleeve. It's all right, he said. He sounded kind of like a girl, too. Harry felt his face heat up more, and hoped the boy wasn't going to call him on his mistake. The redhead let go and held his hand out, smiling brightly. I'm Kurama. He'd heard some strange names since he found out he was a wizard, but most of them were based on recognizable words or names. Or astronomy. But he'd never heard of a Kurama star or constellation in class. Ama. Mina. Kurama caught himself. No, Kurama Mina Mino. Okay, why had he stumbled over his own name? Harry Potter. Pleasure to meet you. Kurama turned back to the display, carefully moving the china to look at the boxes underneath. There should be other patterns here. Harry was thrown. Kurama hadn't noticed his name? Or had he not heard it? Hello, my name is Harry. Kurama gave him a strange look, smiling again to take the sting out of his words. Yes, I heard the first time. He signaled the shopkeeper. Could you box this up for me? The man took the rose set, and Kurama began taking out the unopened boxes. As long as I'm in your way, I may as well help. Harry was both thrilled and confused that Kurama didn't seem to recognize his name. Thanks? No problem. Kurama pressed one box into Harry's hands and kept looking. You said a less girly pattern. You mean one without flowers? Harry abruptly realized that there was a subtle pattern of vines and tiny blossoms in the weave of Kurama's tunic. Oops. That one's a simple stripe pattern, Kurama told him, pointing at the box he'd given Harry. There was nothing in his voice to say he'd taken offense, or even noticed. The rest of these are flowery, he concluded, replacing the boxes. He stood up, brushing tiny wrinkles and a bit of dirt from his trousers. Thanks. Harry felt like a skipping record, but what was he supposed to say? Hey, I was wondering, Kurama said as he counted out his money and paid. Harry tensed, expecting the celebrity stuff to come up now. Are there any places here that I shouldn't miss? Or not? It's my first time in England. Huh? Well, if we were in Hogsmeade, I'd say Honeydukes, but we're not. What's Hogsmeade? Wizarding Village. Only one in Britain, but it's up in Scotland, Harry replied without thinking. Are you asking about wizarding or muggle sites? Wizard. The rest of Britain has tour books. Good point. Harry considered this for a bit, as he paid. Well, a lot of wizard sites are mentioned in muggle guidebooks as legends. Hermione had made her parents take her to as many of them as possible between first and second year. The summer, a house elf was blocking Harry's mail. The Tower of London is full of ghosts and wizarding artifacts. I think there are a few wizard shops scattered around the country, too. But pretty much everything is clustered here or in Hogsmeade. As he and Kurama left the shop, Harry paused, then blurted, "I could show you around some." Kurama looked startled. "My friends are getting robes. I don't have to be there for a bit." And it was so bloody good to talk to someone who didn't know who he was for a change. "If it's not a problem," Kurama said slowly, "I do have time before I have to meet back with my group, too." "Cool," Harry gestured down the street. "I was going to browse at the Quidditch shop. Do you like Quidditch?"
"I don't know much about Quidditch," Kurama admitted.
"You don't? It's a great game!"
"I've heard it's like basketball on broomsticks, only with cannonballs chasing the players."
"Well, it's a bit more complicated than that." And Harry began explaining all about Quidditch.